Ho, ho, hello, and welcome to SMPD, the podcast where we look back at the shows that shaped our childhood. It is December once again, listeners. We've reached the end of another year. We all made it. Well done. But that can, of course, mean only one thing. It is time for us to look at another Christmas special. And so this year, we've decided to go for The Simpsons Christmas Special, also known as Season 1, Episode 1. The Simpsons roasting on an open fire. Hey, Mark, do you want to feel old?
Yes, always.
Okay, so as we record this episode, December 17th, 2024, it is 35 years to the day that this episode first aired.
Yep. I there are a few things around this. I didn't realize it was episode one. I thought it was
Nor
the end
did
of
I.
season. I thought it was the last one, but it wasn't. It was the first. So this would be the first like post Tracy Ullman episode, so after it sort of got picked up on its own. I watched it this morning. I was up at about four for whatever reason, so I thought I'll chuck it on and watch it then. And yeah, the first thing I saw was the date on it. I thought, oh fuck, here we go.
Mm. I think I did know that it was the first episode, but I had just blocked that from my memory because it doesn't seem normal to open on a Christmas special. But then I've been thinking, because I watched this about 5 days ago now, and I've been thinking on it ever since, and like stretching my mind back, I'm pretty sure actually, yes, the first thing I saw was a Christmas episode, because I remember, like, I was very young when this aired, obviously. I was like seven, probably eight in this country. I was 7 or 8, something like that, anyway. So I was quite young, but I'm old enough to sort of have a vague recollection of it, but I didn't know what the fuck The Simpsons was, right? It was just there was this new cartoon that was going to be on Sky One, and then it was on prime time on a Thursday evening. This was on at like 8 p.m when it first started airing on a Thursday evening. They used to have like a comedy block, Sky One, on a Thursday. They also showed things like In Living Colour and Full House and stuff like that. And this was coming into that slot. So the only reason I saw it was because I used to watch that slot. I didn't know what the fuck this was. And so I can remember then, casting my mind back, I was like, oh yeah, I do remember seeing it, and it was a Christmas special, but by the time it had hit us in the UK, it wasn't December.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, what the fuck is this? Why are we watching a Christmas special? And then, of course, I carried on watching the rest of season one, and it made sense that that was just the first episode. But yeah, chronologically, it doesn't feel like it belongs here, and that's because it doesn't. You take it.
I mean, I picked this up. So we didn't have Sky or cable or anything else. So I picked this up. It kind of probably a year or so later. I think it was about 91 when it really sort of exploded here. And you had like Do the Bartman came out, and you had like VHS collections with like 3 or 4 episodes on and stuff like that. And it became really popular. I think there was a magazine as well where you had little figurines and stuff like that. So there's loads of merch exploded with it. As soon as it hit in this country, it was basically right, this is everything. And so I came to it a little bit later on, and a friend of mine had the video. I mean, it had Bart the General, Mona and Lisa, another episode, and and this Christmas episode on it. My friend had it, and we used to watch it around his house after school, probably twice a week. So that's where sort of my first exposure to this was. And then my grandparents had a slightly less than legit version of cable, and they used to record it for us, because similar thing, that if we were up there, we'd watch it, and we'd watch it again that Thursday night block. And then when it moved to Sundays around about season four, they used to record a block where you had whatever wrestling had been on that week, then Simpsons, then something else, then X-Files. So there was like a block of like 4 hours. So you'd have a tape on long play, you'd stick it in before you went to the pub and let it run until it ran out. And then he'd give us that on a Monday. And so we used to pick it. So that's where we sort of got into Simpsons from there. That was probably a couple of years later. This one, it's funny looking back at it now because there's so many changes and so many differences.
Massive.
Not just in the style, but like the coloration and stuff. So Sherry and Terry have brown hair as opposed to purple hair, things like that.
Yeah.
But it's you can just see where it's all come from. And it was really nice going back to it going, okay, yeah, I remember when Homer looked like that. He sounded a little bit different. The voice wasn't quite the same. And he wasn't quite as stupid. He was just
That's the big change, isn't it? He's more of your average...
He's your everyman, isn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, definitely. Whereas, I mean, as early as season two, if you look at it, that change happens where he's less of an everyman and more of an imbecile. But here he is just Joe Everyman. That's the idea, right?
And I mean, it's set up very much, I mean, from this episode being the very start, it's set up as an animated sitcom.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
And it's, I mean, you did have them, but they weren't to this level. They certainly weren't this long. They certainly didn't run for fucking 35 years. So, I mean, there's obviously something in that. But yeah, it's one of the first ones I remember of being like, seeing an animated sitcom of the vein of the things that we were watching at the same time. So things like Full House and stuff like that. Yes, you had Flintstones, yes, you had the Jetsons and stuff like that. But I don't know what it was, they never quite felt the same as this.
No.
This just felt a bit, because they were, obviously, no, for any sitcom, the situation they're in is something you can't relate to. But where you've got a family with a father who, works his ass off and they've never got any money, a mother who's looking after the kids who are smart asses and they want stuff because they're kids and they want to have the life their friends have and all the rest of it. And it's just something that's eminently relatable, unless one of these fucking super rich people who never worry about anything. You can see, as a child, you can see yourself in the characters and you can see your parents in the characters. And as you grow up, you can certainly see, oh, fuck yeah, I remember that point where I had to choose between putting petrol in the car to go to work or buying food for a couple of days. And it's those type of things. And, and this episode in particular really hammers that home, how fragile the employment is.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that you need to, one bad decision and something is completely out of your control and you're on your ass and you are struggling. That was looking at this thinking this is probably the best certainly one of the best examples of an animated sitcom I can ever remember. And going back to these early episodes, they were probably the best ones for that because they weren't they were more rooted in real life and real scenarios. And they weren't going to space and they weren't flying to wherever this week and dealing with lions and all the rest of it, because it was just trying to ground it in this is a regular family.
Yeah.
They just happen to be yellow and have four fingers.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the key, isn't it? Where you're saying about, this running for 35 years and there is no ifs, ands or buts about this. This is the definitive animated sitcom. You cannot argue with that, whether you like it or not. And I've never met anyone that doesn't like The Simpsons.
My mother.
Really? I was just about to say, if those people are out there, they're weird. But
I stand by it.
Yeah. Like I've never ever met a single person that there are people that really like it. I mean, I'm not one of those either. I'm not a super fan, and The Simpsons has its super fans, and that's, this is probably the only time we'll look at The Simpsons on this podcast, right? Because it doesn't quite fit with our genre completely. It's not really a Saturday morning show. It is a late night animated sitcom just pitched at families. But I don't think there's anyone else that I know that dislikes it. But as I say, those super fans, we're not going to get into that level even on this podcast. I'm not, because I'm not one of those. Like I would go as far to say back in the day, certainly I loved it. I would watch it religiously at 6 p.m. every Sunday. And then most of the time when it was on throughout the week as well, I would watch it. I've seen God knows how many episodes over the course of my lifetime, probably not as many as I think because of the amount they were repeated. We're certainly not going to get the super fandom level, but this one specifically, you're right, this feels more grounded even than some of the later Simpsons episodes. It is very, it is an animated sitcom. This storyline wouldn't be out of place in any other family sitcom of the era. No. However, I will say, and this is very unusual for The Simpsons, particularly the show that it would become, and how renowned it is for breaking new ground, particularly in its structure and its storytelling, its ideas. It's part of the reason we're able to say it feels like it would fit everywhere else is because there's not a single original idea in this entire episode.
Oh God, no, it's very staid. It's very, it's almost paint by numbers.
It really is. It's a Christmas special by numbers.
I was going to say it's a wonderful life without the debt, without the contemplating suicide. You know, life is ruined. We can't move on with things. Everything's falling apart. It's all my fault. Mm-hmm. And that's of desperation. And yeah, you know, you see it through A Christmas Carol and all the versions of that have been done. And yeah, this is paint by numbers. It's Christmas is ruined and we'll save it somehow. Yes, there's a twist because, you know, the family unit is a bit dysfunctional, would become a lot more dysfunctional as it went on. But actually it's relatable, and the fact that, you know, it ties into, like, you know, right at the start when they're writing their Christmas list, Lisa wants a pony. Mm-hmm. And all she wants is a pony. But actually when they turn up with a dog at the end, that's good enough too, because it's something for her to love. And I think that you'll have seen that in sitcoms at the time where somebody does turn up with a gift that's not really that practical, but everybody loves. Yeah. And it's almost National Lampoon-ish, where it galvanizes everybody at the end.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because yeah, Wonderful Life I can see, but that's where I went immediately upon watching this, is this is a rehash. This is an animated rehash of National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. Like it literally is, you know, Homer holding out for the bonus that doesn't come and trying to give the kids the perfect family Christmas. But then the family are getting involved, you know, because Patty and Selma are over, and you get
the shit with the lights.
With the lights and Flanders one upping him, and then going shopping and picking up all the rubbish. Like it is Christmas Vacation. Yeah. But in animated forms, with added gambling, basically.
Yes,
that's what we're looking at here. And look, that's not to say that it's bad, because it's not. It's executed very, very well. But it just struck me as unusual, particularly for and this is the first time I've watched The Simpsons in, I would say, probably 15 years, if not longer.
Yeah, I was up to date with it until probably about season 12, 13, and then life got in the way. Mm. It was one of those which didn't have the platform. No, we stopped having Sky quite a while ago, just because I was working away all the time, so I was never watching it. So it just wasn't worth the money. And then so fell away from it. And then when it came onto Disney Plus with the Fox buyout, I started picking up some of the ones I'd missed. So I think I picked up from around about season 20-ish. I'm not up to date. I've not watched through the 15 seasons that followed since then. But I've seen enough to think, actually, yeah, there are things that come up, like, you know, things with Homer's mother, who, you know, quite early on in the run, we find that she's not actually dead, that she's on the run from the law. She pops up a couple of times. And there's sort of recurring things like that, which every now and again you will get. And it's one of those that, again, in true sitcom fashion, it doesn't matter if you haven't seen the one it's relating back to, because there's enough going on in that episode to be able to live with it. Mm. But certainly these early ones I've seen.
Oh God!
Dozens of
this episode alone. I don't know, and not just at Christmas. This wasn't just a Christmas.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, this isn't actually a Christmas special. I will trot out
it's
a
just
Christmas
an episode. If it's on, I'll watch it.
But yeah, it's just an episode of The Simpsons. Like, you mentioned the video with Bart the General and stuff on earlier on. I mean, I remember getting that repeatedly from our local video shop as well. It was one of the, I've mentioned this in the show before, it was one that you could have for free. When you rented a new release title, you could pick a free video, and The Simpsons videos were in that mix. So I'd quite often get Simpsons or Wrestling or Turtles or whatever.
Yeah.
So I've seen the Bart the General video many, many times, to the point where, like we were saying, that like I kind of blocked it from my head that this wasn't episode one, because in my head, Bart the General is episode one, because it's the first one on the first video
on that
came.
Tape.
Right. But it's only episode one, because this should have ended the first season, essentially. That was the plan. This was going to end the first season. But the episode they wanted as the pilot, which is actually the episode that ends the first season, was shit. So shit that the network refused to run it and almost pulled the entire show.
Okay.
So basically, the production team just went, well, okay, but we've got these handful and they're good. So they ran those and that block started with this one. And whilst they ran these, they were tidying up the other episodes. And when I say they were shit, it wasn't the writing or anything like that. It was that the animation was
the quality
poor. The quality was bad. So this sort of bought them time. But what that meant was that it dropped in to a kind of mid-season slot. It dropped in December and started with this episode. So
yeah,
that's how it became season one, episode one. But then it's interesting. You mentioned a lot of the recurring gags, and it's a long time since I've seen The Simpsons, just because, yeah, like, life gets in the way. I've barely got time to watch any new TV, let alone keep rewatching old Simpsons episodes. I think the last time I properly sat down and watched them was when the DVD box sets came out, and I watched about the first four seasons then. I, like you, intended on doing a rewatch with Disney Plus. That's never happened. But it's interesting how much of what I would come to know as, like, classic Simpsons, a lot of the recurring gags then, and a lot of the catchphrases are actually from this episode. As I was watching it, there was stuff popping up, and I was like, oh, that's from this episode. Oh, that's you know, things like the, I'll quit it, I'll quit it, I'll quit it. I did not realize, like, obviously I knew it was early in the run, but it was only a rewatch this episode. I'm like, oh yeah, of course it's from this episode, you know?
Yeah.
Excuse me. So there was quite a lot that I actually, I remembered more than I thought I did then, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I remember the storyline. I remember them getting Santa's Little Helper, you know, when we put this on the list, and we said, and it just said Simpsons Christmas Special, and we were both like, oh, okay, that's the one where they get Santa's Little Helper, and that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I remembered all of that. But there's very little of what we would think of as The Simpsons now then, actually, in this episode. Like I said, it's quite jarring when you watch this.
Yeah. I mean, you find that anyway. When you watch, I think it's the end of season, between season two and three, or three and four, where they change animation houses, and it becomes a lot more polished, and it becomes, the characters are a lot more rounded, they're a lot more uniform. Homer in particular, the character design on Homer is a lot, it's probably the most changed, apart from sort of the coloration of, like, Barney's hair and the twins and stuff like that. He's the model that's changed the most in terms of the shape of his mouth and stuff like that. But you look at that and think, actually, no, with the exception of that stuff, there's so much you pick up from these early episodes. And I think, well, even now, you wouldn't look at it and go, well, that's just a really crap drawing of The Simpsons. That's just what The Simpsons looked like.
Yeah.
And same as I don't look like I looked like 35 fucking years ago.
No.
I'd have been really fucking annoyed if I did look like this 35 years ago. But it's one of those, and you think, well, actually, yeah, as you watch through it, yes, it looks different. Yes, it's as a show, it's evolved greatly, and it's become, in order to sustain itself, it's become so fantastically far-fetched, and I don't want to say cartoony because it's a cartoon, but it's almost a caricature of what it started out as.
Definitely. You know, when we're talking about how grounded this is, and the reason it feels, you know, so kind of like it could be anyone else, is because it's got all of these tropes in it. But it's because it's got that real suburban family sitcom feel. And it's like you say, it's not in space, and they're not in the Stone Age, and there's not, you know, all these mad things. But then as The Simpsons would go on and they would have to find new ideas, then yes, we would bring in elements of fantasy and science fiction and all sorts of crazy shit.
Because if you don't, nobody's watching this for 35 years. I mean, with the best will in the world, you can have the best writing, you can improve your animation, it's not going to be funny for 35 years.
No. And like I said, a lot of that as well comes from the fact that it is constantly reinventing itself. And, it's kind of legendary for it. Like, its ability to just reinvent itself every season, to constantly find fresh new ways of telling its stories. You know, we recently had the episode that was entirely generated by AI, for instance. It's known for breaking new ground. Which again, is why this is so weird to watch this now and go, oh, yeah, but actually it did start. And I'm hesitant to use the phrase, but I think it's fitting. It did start as a very safe bet, this.
Yes.
They're clearly playing with the guide rails on here. You know.
Yeah, it's like it's what would we make if we were doing live action, what would we make that wouldn't offend anybody, wouldn't get kicked off the air, but people will tune in.
Mm.
Okay, it's a family sitcom and they're a bit dysfunctional, and actually the guy's a bit of a boob, but not too much, he's just a bit of a loser. And I mean, they were fucking dime a dozen.
Yeah.
The thing that set this out from those shows is that it's animated. And that's probably the only thing that's probably the only selling point that it had that made it any different from Different Strokes, Full House, fucking Family Ties, all the millions of sitcoms that were around in the 80s. And that's when you look at Family Guy, and like Family Guy is, it's a different show in its structure, but obviously it plays on the sort of similarities to things like to the sitcoms, because Seth MacFarlane grew up on them, same as we did. This didn't do that. This is trying to emulate that, but in animated form.
Mm.
And I think that's why it landed, because it was different enough from those other shows, but it was similar enough that nobody's going, oh, yeah, I don't know about this. I'm not sure I feel about this. 10 years later, by the time you get South Park and Family Guy and all the other things that were coming through at the same time, so these sort of adult animated sitcoms, it'd been done at this point. I mean, I think South Park even had an episode. This didn't do that. This is trying to emulate that, but in animated form.
Mm.
And I think that's why it landed, because it was different enough from those other shows, but it was similar enough that nobody's going, oh, yeah, I don't know about this. I'm not sure I feel about this. 10 years later, by the time you get South Park and Family Guy and all the other things that were coming through at the same time, so these sort of adult animated sitcoms, it'd been done at this point. I mean, I think South Park even had an episode called Simpsons Did It,
yeah,
whereby every plot line they tried to do, the Simpsons already done it. But as in his alter ego, fucking Professor Chaos, wanted to block out the sun. Well, Simpsons did that.
Yeah.
You know, and it's that type of thing. And yeah, you're right. This was a very safe bet, because it would just do what everybody else is doing, but draw it instead of getting actors in and building sets and having people in an audience, stuff like that. And yeah, it really stood out. And I think that's probably the one thing that certainly drew me to when I started watching. Was, oh, this is kind of like that, but not, because it's a cartoon.
Yeah, it definitely works, you know, to get people through the door. Like I said, I didn't even know what this was when I first watched it, but as soon as... Like, watching it this time now, and I would imagine I would have thought this as a kid as well, but watching it as an adult, and I tried to put myself in that situation of like, okay, coming cold, you don't know what this is. Would you watch it? And the answer is yes, I absolutely would, because it's familiar ground.
Yeah.
And
yes,
it's done really well, is the thing. Like, yes, they're just emulating National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation and It's a Wonderful Life and all of those other movies, but they do it really, really well. And they manage to get, like, with Christmas stuff, especially with Christmas specials, like, there is a very fine line that you have to tread in order for it to be truly, truly classic. You have to get the schmaltz like just right.
Oh yeah.
Just because too little and it's not Christmassy enough, too much and it's saccharine sweet. It's such a fine line to tread, and this nails it absolutely perfectly.
Yeah.
You know, whenever it feels like it's going to get too schmaltzy, they pull it back. And whenever it goes too far the other way, they manage to inject a bit of holiday
spirit. Yeah, just ramp it up a little bit.
Yeah, like they manage to do that perfectly. And they walk that tightrope throughout the entire episode, you know, with Homer keeping it from the family that he hasn't got his Christmas bonus, and then Bart actually finding out that he's Santa Claus, and then them having to go to the dog track. All the while, you've got Patty and Selma just on his case about what a shit father and a shit husband he is, no matter how useless he is, you know, whilst he's absent. And then, like, you get, it's like, and again, for an animated sitcom, which back in when this was airing as well in the 80s, like, even though it's not pitched squarely at kids, like, that would have been most people's perception of this. You know, that's a cartoon, so it's a kid's show.
It's a cartoon. Like, cartoons are for kids, because at this point you didn't really have anything like it. You know, you didn't have the things that this would precede. I think the general perception is that it's a cartoon, therefore it's for, at best, families, if not kids.
Yeah. Oh, kids.
But, you know, but it's lacking the cartoon violence of something like Tom and Jerry, which is where you get the Itchy and Scratchy passage comes in later on, which is brilliant. It's probably one of my favourite parts of the whole show,
mm-hmm.
Are the Itchy and Scratchies. But yeah, I think the risk would have been that you put this on, especially dropping in a Christmas episode to start, is that people would have looked at this and gone, right, I'll stick the kids in front of it while I'm doing whatever. If they're entertained for 20 minutes, I can go wrap presents.
Yeah.
I can go make dinner. I can go and get loaded in the fucking bathtub. Whatever you want to do, because the kids are going to be quiet watching a cartoon. And it's only, I think that the early appeal would have been actually, oh, hang on, that's quite, they're really enjoying that. I'll be enjoying that. I'll just give it a look, make sure it's appropriate. Because, I mean, you will have this in the future. I've had it fairly recently, that the more enjoyment you find the kids getting out of something, the more worried you get that actually they probably shouldn't be watching it necessarily when they are, because if they're laughing at them getting into, it's not subtle enough. And I think that a lot of people adults will have started watching this thinking, okay, I mean, just keep an eye on what the kids are watching, because I'm not entirely sure, but don't know what it is. It's a cartoon, but it's not really a cartoon. And I think people have come to it with that lens, and they're not gone away again for many years.
Definitely. And I think actually this is where unwittingly, because this was only first episode out of the gate out because of circumstance, right? Yeah. But I think this is where unwittingly they played a genius move by putting the Christmas special first, because, yeah, I mean, you're right, now definitely parents are more attuned to the fact, particularly with YouTube and stuff like that, that kids could stumble upon anything, right? So you're gonna,
yes,
you're gonna want to check in on it first. But like, my parents couldn't give two fucks what I was watching on TV in the 80s, right? So the one time you could guarantee that you'll probably get all the family to sit around the TV is over a Christmas special. Like, if ever mom and dad are going to sit down and watch a cartoon with the kids, it's going to be because it's a Christmas special. And it's accepted most of the time that they're animated, right? They were these once-off, one-time-a-year things. You know, your Frosties, your Rudolphs, the Snowman, Charlie. But look, we go back over the last fucking 7-8 years. We've done a fuck ton of them this time of year, right? They're that's why we only do the Christmas special. Like, we only do one in December. We don't do them through the year because this is how they were. So actually, you know, if to just kind of shadow drop this is like, hey, here's an animated Christmas special. Oh, and by the way, if you like this, there's another 11 episodes over the next two months. You know, like, and as an adult then watching it, like, there's no way, I don't know why maybe the dislikes of The Simpsons, there's no way you come away from this then with the perception that it's for kids. Like, initially you think it's because it's a cartoon, and back then that's what it was. But once you've watched an episode, you're like, oh, yeah, kids can watch it. It's perfectly safe for kids.
Yes.
But it's not just for kids. And I think, actually, that's the brilliance of The Simpsons, is there is humor there for kids. Like, most kids will respond to Bart straight away, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, that's how it was certainly how it was marketed in this country, is that Bart was the lead.
Yeah.
No, it was the... I mean, all the merch was... I mean, I remember we went to Florida in 91... and we bought these because we were in the car, lots of traveling around various different parks and whatever else. We bought these, I think they're probably 500 mil sort of water bottles with Bart Simpson on. And all it was a picture of Bart with, I'm Bart Simpson, who the hell are you?
Yeah.
But that was fucking everywhere.
Oh, yeah, totally. Totally.
And that was certainly how it was sold in this country, is that this was a show about a wisecracking 10-year-old boy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I wasn't far off from that. So that was sort of aspirational. But even looking at this first episode, Bart is not the fucking lead in the show.
Homer's always been the lead, right? It's just that it was marketed. People had the misconception that it would be a children's show because it's a cartoon, right? And Bart was marketable. And that's what brings the kids to the show. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
Right? So as a 10-year-old through to probably a maybe 17, 18-year-old, you're watching this thinking Bart is the lead. And then it's interesting, isn't it, that the show kind of grows with you, because as you get older then you realize, and you get a job, and you actually start to fit into society, you realize, no, this show is all about Homer. Like, it's all about Homer, regardless of whether it's this sort of lovable schlub everyman that we've got in the first season, or the absolute imbecile that he goes on to become.
Yeah.
It's always actually about Homer. He is unquestionably the lead. And he's certainly the character now that I think most people carry in their hearts. It's not Bart.
Yes.
It's Homer.
Oh, God, no.
You know? Because you grow out of Bart very quickly, because he is one note. He is just Dennis the Menace.
And and as you get older, it's a lot more difficult to relate to that.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, watching it this time now, like, I'm just watching him thinking, if that was my kid. Like... So, but that's the point, right? That's the whole point. Because then, you know, you've got the counterpoint. Like, you've also got Lisa. So, like, whilst Bart's the little shit, like, it proves that Homer and Marge are actually good parents, because they've also produced Lisa. But then on checks and balances, they've also produced Maggie. So...
Yes. But at this point, Maggie wasn't. Maggie was just a fucking a starfish, effectively. I mean, she was always in the fucking snowsuit, and that first season, you got nothing out of Maggie.
No.
Maggie went on to become an absolute fucking sociopath.
Seeing that snowsuit again, and especially now having a toddler myself, who at this time of year is wearing snowsuits, like, I mean, and she still loves a dummy, my daughter as well. So, like, whenever she's fully got up in the snowsuit, she's got a dummy in, like, it's a Maggie Simpson look. And then, like, but I say, I haven't seen The Simpsons for years, but watching it again this time now and seeing Maggie, and I'm like, yep, totally, totally.
Yeah, just need to make sure she's got an orange suit.
Yeah, yeah. Hers is pink, but yeah, if it was orange, it would be. I mean, she's not unlike Maggie in a lot of ways anyway.
Yeah, remember that time she shot Mr. Burns?
It wouldn't fucking surprise me, honestly. Like, yeah, I mean, we don't do video anymore, listeners, and I don't think my camera's up to the task, actually, but if it was, you'd be able to see what is almost a broken nose, because I have a massive amount of swelling on the bridge of my nose right now, where my daughter's decided to just hit me in the face with a Cinderella doll, because she did not want to get dressed. Toddlers for you. But yeah, where were we before we went off onto toddlers? Bart Simpson and Homer Simpson.
Yeah.
So it's interesting how the show kind of grows with you like that. Yeah. And I think that's part of the staying power of it as well, isn't it? Is that kids are always going to be able to respond to Bart, but we as adults are always going to be able to respond to Homer. And I think there's also a universality in the fact that, yes, this is 35 years old now, but because it's animated, it doesn't feel it. Like, these episodes look older, obviously. The animation isn't as polished. Yeah. But in terms of the world, like, if you look back at, say, Full House now, right, that's going to look very dated because you're going to have 80s-style sets and everybody's going to be talking on fucking gigantic phones and, you know, house phones and they're going to have ghetto blasters and boomboxes.
I mean, actually, when they rebooted Full House in 2018, I think, or 2016, 2018, and they did Fuller House... Yeah, it was very difficult to try and maintain that because you wanted to keep the feel. So they're in the same set, it's the same house, it's the same cast, just they've grown up and they have kids of their own now. But trying to keep that feel and trying to keep that sort of authenticity to something that's, you know, 20 plus years gone at this point, it's very difficult. Whereas because it's animated and Springfield has expanded a lot and the cast has expanded a lot, and the things that the family have done has massively outgrown this two parent, three kid family with a stable but not very well paying job and a stay at home mom. That's always going to be a thing. And actually, it doesn't matter how slick the animation gets. I think I saw one novelty episode a couple of years ago where they copied the Lego animation style, so all the cast were Lego people for that episode. Terrified the shit out of it. Just didn't look right. That, and there was a CGI one where it just all didn't look right, and it was fucking weird. But yeah, like, it doesn't matter what they make it look like, the core of it is the same. And actually, because it's just that little bit off anyway, it doesn't matter. Technology changes, but to see them on an 80s style phone wouldn't really bother you because it's just a phone.
And it's because it's...
And the cars are square and stuff like that.
Well, because it's a cartoon, so it's stylized. That's the thing. So they're able to get away with that. You know, it's got that timeless feel to it like that. Because it's a cartoon, it's not real. And if it did look real, then you'd start to slip into the uncanny valley. So that works in its favor. So that's possibly part of the sticking power as well. But it was for me going back and rewatching this now. Like I say, this isn't a Christmas special I watch every year. And it's not very Christmassy, is the thing. Like it's got like the themes there. Like there's snow and there's carols and they go to a carol concert and like yes, it's very much like Christmas Vacation or Wonderful Life or what have you. But it's not. Like I said, they tread in the schmaltz line very well. It's not smacking you around the head with Christmas.
Yeah.
And I think that works in its favor, but that's in terms of quality anyway. But that's probably why I don't watch it every year. You know, it's not. Yeah. Whereas I will trot out the same old Christmas. Like every year, I guarantee you I will watch Rudolph. I will watch Charlie Brown. I will watch The Grinch. Yeah. Guaranteed.
Yeah.
Every single year. Right? Yeah. Because they feel like Christmas. Because they are all... smacking you in the face. Well, actually, Charlie Brown isn't.
Charlie Brown, not so much.
Not so much.
Yeah, I get what you mean, and I think that the Christmas genre has become a whole other thing. You know, certainly with the advent of streaming and stuff like that. I mean, Netflix start. I mean, it's always there, but they start actively promoting Christmas stuff on their splash screen from about September.
Yeah,
and the amount of really fucking. Over the top, schmaltzy, cheesy Christmas movies are on there. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of Christmas, but certainly not a huge fan of that type of Christmas movie. But they're always on in this house because Tori loves them. And you look at it and think, like we talked earlier, it's too far in the one, sort of towards the one end of the scale. But it has to be because that's, as a genre, that's what people expect from this. People are expecting to see these really cheesy, really saccharine sweet Everybody learns a valuable lesson. The antagonists get their comeuppance, and it's all very staid. And you can, again, by numbers, you could write it with your eyes closed, and you can turn any one of them on, and you know exactly what's going to happen from the first 10 minutes. This doesn't do that. It's not a traditional, as I say, it's not a traditional Christmas special.
No.
It just happens to be an episode set at Christmas, and because of that, I think it's a lot more endearing. For that reason,
it's kind of like the Die Hard of TV Christmas specials, isn't it? Where it's even called The Simpsons Christmas Special. It opens with the words Christmas Special, even though it's the first episode, again, which I think is genius on their part for getting people in. But yeah, it's like it's a Christmas special because Christmas is intrinsic to the story and it's set at Christmas, but it's not about Christmas as such.
No, it's about the family and about Homer and the dynamic and everything else.
Well, yeah, it's about you know, the outside perception of Homer as the head of the family, isn't it? That's where this is, and it just so happens that Christmas is the trigger to that because he's not got his Christmas bonus and he's expected to provide, you know, because he's been, you know, they've been saving the Christmas money that Marge has been storing in her hair or whatever, but Bart being Bart has gone and blown it on a fucking tattoo. So, but then Marge is a stay-at-home mom. So, like, all the Christmas presents then have got to come out of Homer's bonus. So it's about this ability to provide for the family. It's a very 80s, very, very traditional family dynamic. But that's... Yeah.
And actually, when you think of The Simpsons as it goes on, how many times does Homer lose his job or almost lose his job?
Yeah.
And you have a retread, not a retreading, but you have the same problems where they don't have the income, they can't afford the lifestyle, they are in danger of losing the house, or they are in danger of losing the car, or whatever it's going to be, because it's something that people deal with.
Yeah.
And for all the times that Homer goes into space, or they meet aliens, or monsters, or whatever else, there's always that core to this, which says, look, this is, we want to make this as grounded and relatable as we can. So every now and again, they might miss a mortgage payment. There might be an illness that actually says, look, you can't work for a while. If you don't work, this is America. If you don't work, you don't get paid. Yeah. And there's a lot to that sort of, to that lived experience that starts in this first episode.
Yeah, definitely. But I think that's the thing that stood out to me the most, was like, look, The Simpsons is The Simpsons. There's no way, like I said, I haven't watched it for a very long time, but there's no way we can say, oh, it was great to watch this again because even if I haven't watched an episode in 15 years, like, it's such an integral part of our culture now. Like, this doesn't go away. Do you know what I mean? It's always, even if I'm not watching it, it's almost by osmosis, I know what's going on. Right, because there's still Simpsons merch everywhere, and there's still Simpsons games and Simpsons t-shirts every time you go to a tourist trap destination, and Bart Simpson toys, and it's everywhere.
Like, to the point where it's even, I mean, it pops up on the news app. So there was a story a couple of weeks ago where it was being heralded falsely as of the end of The Simpsons because Bart turned 11.
Yeah.
And it's like this world-breaking thing. All of a sudden, these characters are aging in the show, which they never have before. And I think they kind of got around it with it all being a dream or something like that. You know, so he stepped out of the shower or something. But, you know, it's one of those that made fucking international news.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's...
You could only fucking dream. When you're setting out your initial 12-episode pitch, you could only fucking dream of that.
Oh, yeah, totally, totally. I don't think anybody could have conceived of how massive this was going to be and how much it was actually going to affect all of our lives. And so I can't say that I was coming into this going like, oh, I wonder what it's going to be like. It was more about what's this specific episode going to be, right? And that was the thing that struck me, was just how non-Christmassy it is. What I mean by that is it didn't give me the Christmas feels, you know. It did give me the feels. Like, there are moments of it that are really quite touching, but it's not.
Yeah,
it didn't give me
it's
that.
It's not because it's Christmas.
Yeah, again, it's Die Hard, or you mentioned A Wonderful Life. That's a perfect example, right? We all think of A Wonderful Life as a Christmas movie. It's not. It's a movie set at Christmas, and the whole movie isn't even really set at Christmas. Only the finale, only Act Three, is really set at Christmas. If anything, it's more of a New Year movie, because that's actually where the big finale happens. Yeah, they're all singing Auld Lang Syne and stuff. But it's become this kind of holiday classic. And this is, I think this is almost that level, you know.
Yeah.
It just it's never broken through to become that holiday classic is the thing. And I think that is only because it's The Simpsons and there is now so fucking much of it and it's on. Like, yes. I guarantee you could turn on any TV set anywhere in the world at any time and start flicking through the channels and you would find The Simpsons.
Well, case in point, when we went to Cannes in 2007, we went the first time. And it, on a Sunday morning at about fucking half past eight, flicking on, and it was on in French.
Yep.
Because, and there was fuck all else on. So I'm fairly sure we sat there and watched it as well, not knowing what was going on with it, or not being able to follow it.
Yeah.
But still able to watch it because it's still The Simpsons.
I mean, yeah.
No, that's not an experience. No, that's not a unique experience to that. I mean, I lived in Australia for a couple of years, and exactly the same thing. You turn on the TV, and at any point between probably 6 and 9, you would find an episode every day of the week.
Yeah. And so I think that's why this hasn't become like a big Christmas thing, because this has probably been on 4 times this year. At least.
Probably, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's not something that's just being trotted out every Christmas. Like I said, it's not The Grinch. It's not Charlie Brown. Yeah. It's not Rudolph.
It's just season one.
It's just an episode of season one of The Simpsons. And so that's unfortunate. But then, is anyone really giving a fuck about that when it's The Simpsons? Like,
yeah, exactly. I mean, what, we're 35 years in now, so you're probably talking, with the exception of this season, which was half a run, probably talking 20 plus a year.
Hmm.
I mean, fuck me, that's a lot of episodes.
It's a hell of a lot of episodes. However, you know, having said that about like, oh, it's why it's not like regarded as a Christmas classic or stuff like that. If, you know, if I were to sit down and start, like, I couldn't name a load of Simpsons. Those early season one and season two episodes, I know some of the titles, right? After that, I'd lost track of the titles. But just in terms of like even naming plot lines or naming individual episodes, like there are probably I don't know, maybe 15 or 20 that I can pull off the top of my head, you know, like this is the one where that happened, this is one, and this would be one of them. Like I said, when we saw this, it's like, oh, that's the one where Homer goes to the dog track and they get Santa's little helper. So so it is at least memorable from that standpoint. Now maybe that's because, like you said, it was on those early VHSs for us, so it was one. And certainly for me, it's because I've always loved Christmas, you know, as discussed on Better Than Mario last week. I'm a big Christmas guy. So, like, as a kid, you know, this is the Christmas episodes are brilliant because there's fucking snow and there's Santa and there's Christmas carols. So I'm all about that as well. But, yeah, I think what I'm trying to get at is I thought this was very, very good. But, of course, it was very, very good because it's the fucking Simpsons. And it's early Simpsons, which is the best Simpsons.
If it wasn't good, it wouldn't still be here now.
No. So, of course, it's good. But what it isn't really for me is a magical Christmas special. You know, I've enjoyed watching it. Don't get me wrong. And I watched it after I'd finished work for the year as well. So I should be in, like, holiday mode.
Hmm.
But it just wasn't giving me that Christmassy, you know.
Yeah.
But it was very, very good. It's very, very good. And, you know, there are moments of it, like I said, they get you right in the feels. At least the speech to Patty and Selma, I think, is so well written. I don't know how that's bypassed me for 35 years. But what a brilliant little third act speech from Lisa, where they're like, they're ragging on Homer and he's not there to defend himself. And she's like, well, okay, maybe he is useless and maybe he's not a very good father, but he's the only father that I've got and he's mine.
Well, this is it.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's such a lovely speech. And it's so well observed as well, because like Lisa's more intelligent than your average child. Yeah, but it's still written in that very childlike, innocent way of like, well, I don't care if he hasn't got any money and I don't care if he hasn't got a very good job or whatever.
Yeah, he's still my dad.
Like, so there's lovely moments like that, you know, and they this definitely falls by the wayside in later seasons as well. But like the genuine bond between Homer and Bart as well, the love-hate relationship that's in there
well.
Where it's like, yes, he's a little shit, but he's my son. Like, you know, he's a little shit because he's my little shit.
Yeah, and I think that there's again, as we've just talked about, there's certain sort of storylines you remember. There's the one where he gets the fake ID and he rents a car, and so he's off gallivanting in Canada, and then Lisa is working with Homer at the power plant, who's like, "Don't take your daughter to work day," and then she ends up doing fucking weekends or whatever else. And again, you see that sort of that bond between the two of them. And every now and again, that comes up. So the, you know, so the Homer and Lisa relationship. And you get the same played off with Marge and Bart. And it's so well observed. It is. You'll have, and I mean, you've only got the one. I say only, that's the wrong word. But having two, you do find that you'll have periods where there's one of them you gravitate towards a lot more because you're doing something and it's fun and you know you're getting on very well. And then the next minute, you want to rip their fucking heads off.
I mean, I get that with the cats, and, so I do know what you mean. only one child, many cats.
But it's that sort of thing where, but you do, you know, you have that, and it's so well observed in the show that actually the only one you don't really see, there's not that much between Lisa and Marge.
No, there isn't, is there? Actually, you're right.
And I don't know if that picks up over the years. I mean, it certainly didn't in the early seasons. But yeah, it's fairly well observed in literature and certainly in comedy that there's a father-daughter and mother-son bonds are a lot stronger.
Yeah.
And that's certainly played off in the first couple of seasons of The Simpsons, whereby if Bart does anything wrong, it's not the fact that Homer's going to spank him, it's Marge's disapproval. That's always the thing that gets him.
Yeah, I mean, that's writ large here, isn't it, with the whole tattoo. Yeah,
with the tattoo.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's exactly that. And then you know, you've got Lisa defending Homer, whereas you can't, You can't hear that speech coming out about Marge.
No, definitely not. You mentioned in that, like I say, it's there in the tattoo, and that's another one of those moments. You've just jogged my memory. It's another of those moments where I'm watching this, going, "Oh yeah, that's right. That was this episode. The whole moth tattoo."
Yes.
And there's all of these little things that are from this episode. I think, yeah. Oh, it's this. Yeah, that was this one. That was this one. That was this one. You know, the Bart singing, which of course was this one, but it's just been pushed back by Bart singing Jingle Bells at the start with the Batmobile losing his wheel and stuff like that. Now, correct me if I'm wrong as well. I may be misremembering this. I'm pretty sure there was a whole Christmas album that went with this.
Yeah.
It would have come out way later after it had been seen, but there was a Christmas album, wasn't it, that had these carols on it?
I think it came out in this country, it came out the following year.
Yeah.
Because they had a build up where they did do the Bartman and something else, and then
what was the other single? Oh my god, yeah, that's gonna bug me.
I've been trying to think of it all fucking day. But so you had that, and then on the back of that, you had the Simpsons Christmas album, where you did have these almost, and it was quite fashionable at times, these sort of parody albums, these parody Christmas albums. I mean, I talked last year about this one I've been trying to track down since fucking 1993, which my listener finally pointed me to last year. But that, you know, parody albums have always been a thing, and the whole, you know, Weird Al kind of cornered the market in the US for a long time. But they've, you know, wasn't a new thing when he started doing it. And I mean, you had it as a product of The Simpsons very early on. But the thing I felt with that is that first scene, that opening scene where they turn up late for the carol, the school concert, and they park wherever the fuck they can because they haven't got time to get into the parking lot, and so they don't, and he's, as you would when you're walking into a place before the show starts, he's greeting everybody. You know, hey, how are you doing? I haven't seen you for a while. All this sort of stuff. But the show's already going on, so people are pissed off. So you got that. You get that, and then you get Lisa, the overachiever, and her show, and then you get Bart taking the piss in his, and it just sets out who these characters are really early on.
Yeah,
and it's almost like you think, you know, you look at a lot of shows, and they'll have an idea of who the characters are on day one. And then they'll evolve over time. We've been rewatching Friends recently because number one's got into that, and she's watching it fucking on repeat on Netflix, which is fine. But you look at the way the characters evolve. It's by the time you get to about season four, they're not really that reminiscent of the early characters because they've become caricatures.
Yeah,
that doesn't happen here as much because they set out their stall very early on and they stick with it. Lisa is always an overachiever, and she's very jealous when anybody else overachieves. Homer's. He becomes more of a boob and becomes more of an imbecile, as we've said, but he's insensitive and he's just a little bit socially unaware.
Yes.
But Bart is not a troublemaker as such. He's not bad. He's just a little bit mischievous. And he's pushing his, you know, he's at that age where he's pushing his boundaries and seeing what he can get away with.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, this is episode one. Season 35, we're still fucking doing that.
Yeah. But you're right. Like they manage in that opening scene alone, where they're going through into the Christmas, they manage to introduce you to every one of these characters. You know instinctively who they all are just from that opening scene. Yeah. Deep, Deep Trouble, by the way, was the other
thing. Deep, Deep Trouble, yes.
I just Googled the track listing for Simpsons Sing the Blues. I could remember the name of the album.
Yes.
So it was Deep, Deep Trouble was the second single. But I swear there was also a Christmas album.
I'm sure there was. If it wasn't an album, there might have been an EP. Three or four tracks on it.
I certainly remember there being, and still, there still is, merchandise based on this episode specifically. Oh, yeah. I have Christmas tree ornaments downstairs based off this episode. I remember there being wrapping paper. There's still greeting cards. There's still, because this was the Christmas episode. And there were other, not Christmas specials, but certainly episodes around Christmas. You know, and winter themes, you know, Mr. Plough, for instance. You know, there are those kind of wintry episodes, but this was the Christmas special.
That's going to be my fucking head all night now.
That name again is Mr.
Mr. Plough.
It's there now.
Yeah, that and the Plough King. Yeah, it pops up every now and again. It's one of those earworms. Every now and again, it'll just pop into my fucking head.
Yeah.
And I've managed to avoid it for a little while now, so that's going to be in there.
Mr. Plough, because that's my name. That name again is Mr. Plough. It's there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's it's that
you get that for mentioning contemplating suicide earlier on, and so I was sat here going losing my sight. So you get that. That's fine.
That's fine. I think I'll take that rather than rather than yours. You do get a lot of these sort of holiday adjacent episodes. You'll have, again, most American sitcoms they make a big thing, so they have their early season gambit, and then they'll run into Thanksgiving, and then from Thanksgiving you're straight into Christmas episode, because that'll be a week or so after Thanksgiving, and then TV kind of stops, and you have all your holiday specials. So you always, you know, you look at any US sitcom, you'll have sort of 7 or 8 episodes, Thanksgiving, Christmas, and then you're starting in the New Year.
Yeah.
Or you're starting at New Year, and there might be a New Year's party or something like that. And that's fairly standard. And because of that, you don't have a Christmas episode, but you'll have a seasonal episode where, I say, it snows, or they're doing, you know, they might be going somewhere where it's unseasonably hot, and then they make a joke about the fact that it's actually supposed to be cold because it's Christmas, but they're in Australia and it's fucking 50 degrees. So they kind of do these holiday adjacent episodes, and I think that because of that, we haven't had too many Christmas episodes, we haven't had too many Christmas specials, but that's what makes them special.
Yeah, definitely.
Because they're not fucking constant. If you had 35 of these motherfuckers, it's going to lose the impact, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And like you say, it's just, even the Christmas specials that we have are they're not overtly Christmas. Like, you're not getting, you know, Father Christmas suddenly show up in Springfield or Frosty the Snowman or anything like that, you know. And it reminded me as well, just because it's current in this house, but I think actually this legacy tracks all the way through. Like, it was reminding me of, like, the Bluey Christmas episodes, because they're very similar as well, in that there are episodes at Christmas, but they're not necessarily about Christmas. You know, it's like, oh, it's the Christmas Swim episode, or it's the Porch Santa episode, or it's, you know. Yes. But I think there's just a natural line traced from The Simpsons through to Bluey anyway.
I mean, it's quite evident. I mean, you look at any family-based cartoon series that's come after it, you cannot help but see the influences.
No.
And yes, okay, there's some very different tones. You know, you get Family Guy, American Dad, South Park, all these things have come later, even into things that are sort of more modern stuff like Rick and Morty. There's, at the core of it, it's a dysfunctional family who want to be closer.
Yes.
And want to have these better relationships. I mean, look at Rick and Morty particularly, where you've got the daughter who, Sarah Chalk, does a voice, whose name I can't remember. But there's a longing for a relationship with a father, and there's a relationship between Rick and Morty, and all the sort of the scrapes and the adventures and all that. Yes, okay, it leans more towards the absurd and the Family Guy side of it, but you don't get these shows without laying the groundwork in fucking 1989 or even earlier on Tracey Ullman's show with The Simpsons.
I just think not just animation, but I just think TV comedy today wouldn't be where it is today without this show.
Yeah.
And that's for better and worse. I'm not saying we wouldn't have anything, because we would, but it wouldn't. This is a nexus point. Like, the airing of this episode is like, there was TV before and then there's TV after. Like, this is an absolute nexus point in not just animated sitcom, in TV history. It's like, this is a changing point.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this before on this show, that for better or worse, and as I said, I I'll say my mother has never been a fan. She was, you know, when we were watching it as kids, she would sort of leave the room.
Wow.
Because she couldn't stand it. Oh yeah, she hated it. But you could put a picture of The Simpsons in front of my mother and she'd know who they were. You could put a picture of The Simpsons in front of my 95-year-old Alzheimer's suffering grandmother and she would know who they were. She might think they were us, actually, thinking about it, but yeah. It's no, while she still had a family, she would, in her 70s and her 80s, she would recognize The Simpsons. She may never have watched it,
yeah,
but she'd know who they were.
Yeah.
And that, you know, you don't reach that sort of level of that sort of iconic status for being another mediocre show.
I think what's truly remarkable with The Simpsons, like you mentioned how much the cast of characters has grown. But I think that actually, like maybe not your grandmother or your mother, but there are certainly, I think you could stop the average person in the street, and I don't think I'm too far off the mark here, right? And you could show them a list, you could show them a picture of 50 Simpsons characters all gathered, right? I reckon they'd get probably 20 to 30 of them named.
Oh, God, easily.
You know, that's, you could do it. You could just, and you could do them all on flashcards, even not as a group. Then they'd be like, right, that's a Pooh. That's Krusty. Yeah. That's Bumblebee Man.
Even if they don't know the names. I mean, you show somebody Joe Quimby. Oh, that's the mayor who fucking
talks
like
Kenneth. That's exactly it, yeah. That's exactly
it. It's, they might not know their name, but they'll know who the character is because they'll have some awareness of it.
Yeah, exactly.
And I mean, the one thing I am surprised at is, I mean, on social media, you get, there are clips of every fucking thing online. I know you're in Facebook or Instagram, wherever else, and a clip will come up of something. You very rarely see clips of The Simpsons.
You're right, actually. You're right.
It's surprising because some of the things you see, it's fucking constant and it's always the same things. Very rarely see The Simpsons.
Do you know, I wonder if that's just because it's too easy, though, is the thing. Like, I think there's an element of work that has to go into generating like a truly standout meme, right? You've got to, like, there's an element of wit involved in it for one, and an element of self-awareness. Whereas The Simpsons, it's just all the work is done for you, right? Because, again, I'm pretty sure, they've had that AI episode, right? We're 35 years in to this run, right? There are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours of TV involved.
You're pushing 800 episodes. You're probably talking, what, 20 minutes an episode?
Yeah. So I'm not doing the maths right, but you're probably talking about, what, 400 to 500 hours worth of TV here, if not more. Whatever situation there will be a Simpsons clip for pretty much any situation, but it's too easy, isn't it? Like, I think if anything, the work there is for somebody to create a generator that's just like, right, you type in the situation and we'll give you almost like a Bible verse generator, but for Simpsons quotes.
Yes,
you go like, you type it in and we'll give you the 30-second
clip quote
where this is relevant in The Simpsons. And that's probably why you don't see it. I did save one on my phone the other day, again, just talking about my daughter, because there's a split screen meme thing, and at the top it was like how other people see my daughter, and there's a picture of Maggie looking all nice in a dress with curls and stuff, and then it's like how my daughter is at home, and there's Maggie brandishing the gun, and I'm just so they are out there.
The only one I sort of see regularly, it's normally put on sports results, but when we're home, where he comes through the hedge to talk to the Flanderses, and then he just slinks and disappears back in. So that's the only one I tend to see.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not even that it's memes. I think certainly for our generation, it's more that it's just entered our vocabulary. Like, stupid Flanders is—I don't know about you, but stupid Flanders is definitely a thing for me. For instance, like, I remember going to Alton Towers a couple of years ago with our D&D group. You can make it. Yeah. Remember being there, and one of our group—I won't mention their name—but you'll know them. Mark was amazed by the monorail because they hadn't seen one before. I don't have to tell you who that is, do I?
No, absolutely not.
Completely amazed by the monorail. The rest of the group instantly just started going, monorail, monorail. And he was just looking at us like, what?
That's it. Yeah. And it's quite funny. I mean, we don't do so much now, but certainly when we were in uni, we were doing master stuff. That the number of times a random Simpsons quote would come out.
Yeah,
and everybody in the group would know what it was
instantly.
You didn't know there wasn't even the one person who didn't recognize it, because we were at that point socially where I was like, oh, okay, I'm not even going to acknowledge it because everybody knows what it is. Everybody chuckled and we moved on.
Yeah,
and I mean, even I mean, so that was, I mean, Christ, we were 15, 16 years into the show at that point. I mean, fuck, that was a long time ago now. But yeah, it's still that way. No, I mean, you still bring out things. I say Monorail is a classic one. I've had that one fairly recently. We were talking about the one in Epcot.
Yeah.
And exactly the same thing happened. Every now and again, I'll roll out a damn TV ruin my imagination while I'm watching TV.
Yep.
And the kids think it's hilarious because they think I'm really fucking witty.
Yeah.
Actually, I just nicked it for Bart Simpson.
Yeah, exactly.
25 fucking years ago.
Yeah. Yep.
But you know, they don't know. They weren't alive. But yeah, as you say, it's one of those things. It surpassed being a TV show many years ago. It's very much a cultural touchstone.
It absolutely is. And it is that, even throwing out those quotes, like you say, when you're in the right company, everybody'll get them. When you're in the wrong company, you just sound incredibly witty. So they're catch-alls. But yeah. I think certainly we're probably the lightning in the bottle generation for it, because we were the right age that it could permeate and grow with us.
Yes.
So I think, like, you know, the quotes that we throw out there as well, like, they're like real deep dives on a show that, like I said, I haven't seen for 15 years at least.
Yeah.
I'll still throw out quotes.
But they're in
there. They're in it. Like, if you throw one out, I'll be able to smash it back, I guarantee it. And I will still throw out, like, real deep cut quotes. And people will go, ah, yeah, okay. And, you know, and not just, like, not fucking nerds, not just our people, like, anybody of our generation. The only other show that comes close to that, and it's not even really that close, but Friends for our generation does that as well.
Yes.
There is a level of which people of our age are culturally aware of. Even if you didn't like the show, you are fully aware of the quotes involved with that.
And again, there are things that have permeated. You know, there are things that have permeated from that. Mm. You know, you've seen, obviously, random shirts with "How You Doing" on it and stuff. Like, oh, we were on a break. All this sort of stuff that, again, this is fucking, what, 25, 30-year-old?
Yeah, I get
30 years since Friends started.
You know, we've mentioned on this show before, but like any guys of our age moving furniture, you get "to me, to you" and "pivot" immediately.
And that's it.
And that is the only thing that even comes close. But I don't think even that's on the level of The Simpsons.
No, I mean, there are other things that come close with particular fandoms and particular fan bases. But
yeah, but that's different because you have to be tuned into that show.
Yeah, not with such a broad cultural stroke where it's literally permeated everything.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, yes, Friends to a massive extent, but even then, nowhere near this.
You know, something as innocent, and it is a catchphrase, but something as innocent and throwaway even as "dope."
Oh, all the time.
Which is just, it's...
It even autocorrects in my phone now, so it's spelled the right way with the apostrophe and everything.
Totally.
Because I use it all the fucking time.
Yeah. You know, it's just your polite way of saying "fuck" now, isn't it? You know? Like, dope. So, yeah, there is... I enjoyed watching this Christmas special, but I did not get the Christmas feels from it, because this is just... It's just the fucking Simpsons. And I don't mean that as a slur, because it's not.
No.
I think this show just transcends criticism at this point. It just is.
Yeah.
It just is. It's a thing. It has a life of its own.
Yeah. I think it's at a stage now where, I mean, yes, okay, we're 35 years in. Yes, I'd imagine, I mean, I'm not up to date with it by any stretch. I would imagine some of the ideas are starting to get a bit either so fucking out there that they're not really plausible, or they're not relatable, or they're retreading old ground. But it's 35 years old. It's earned the right to go out on its own terms.
Totally.
People are still watching it. I mean, with the advent of it, with it appearing at Disney as well, people are still watching it in their fucking millions every year. So Matt Groening and the rest of them, they will flog this until they've had enough.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it will ever end. I think this is just another Peanuts now, isn't it, at this point? Mm. Like, it will go forever. It's in some form, you know? I mean, it's almost like at this point, to pull it from the air at this point would almost be criminal. Like, it's gone for so fucking long. It's like the same thing now with, as we're recording, there's a whole hoo-ha going on with Warner's not wanting to stump up for Sesame Street this year. It's like, but it's fucking Sesame Street. Like,
you can't take Sesame Street off
It will find a home somewhere because it's fucking Sesame Street. This is the same. Like, it's The Simpsons.
Yeah.
It will find a home somewhere. Always.
Yeah.
And this Christmas episode will, I'm sure, just because I don't watch it every Christmas, I'm sure there are families out there that
do. Yeah. Absolutely.
And so if nothing else, this will continue to be played at Christmas time.
Yeah.
I'm convinced there was a Christmas album because I'm convinced I used to play that regularly at Christmas time. So if not, as you say, there was definitely an EP or a single or something.
Yeah, I'll have a look when we finish, and if I find it, I'll
probably give me... Because you've got that whole... Like, the end credits are different over this because they're all carol singing over the end credits. So yeah. I just remember all of that being dumped on an album. I've got to... This is going to bug me if I don't look for it, Mark. I've got to, like...
Yeah, that's fair enough. I mean, I was thinking the same thing today. I'm sure there was more around the Christmas album. One thing I did notice, actually, and it was quite interesting to see, having not seen this episode for a good number of years now, is right at the start, again, when they're in that school show and so they're doing the concert, you get some recurring characters. I talked about Sherry and Terry popping up, and they look slightly different. Milhouse is in there and has the same... He has the same problem as Homer. He doesn't look like he's drawn properly because of what he became. But also you get a very early appearance for Ralph Wiggum, who's a bit of a cross between Ralph and Uta. He's not
actually Ralph yet. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the same. He's drawn the same, but he's not the same character. So there were lots of that came up as well. And there are lots of characters who would, I mean, certainly for the first of 10, 15 years, who would stay in the classes with them, and you see them moving through. You didn't have Miss Hoover or Mrs. Krabappel in this one. They would come later on in that first season, which seems a bit strange for a school sort of scene.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting seeing those as well, and sort of seeing the characters that remain, but what where they came from and what they sort of turned into. It's such a fucking massive cast. I mean, even looking at the coloration on Mo and Barney, for example. Now, Mo has the jet black hair and the pink apron, and then he becomes all grey, and they make him progressively more depressive and more skeezy and all the rest of it. Barney becomes, again, grubbier. Anyway, he's very blonde in this episode. He drives, and yes, okay, he's still a drunk, but he's a lot more functional.
Yeah.
And as the characters sort of progress, it's interesting to see that sort of starting point. And it almost feels, if you were watching a regular sitcom where people are going to age because the cast age, you'd expect to see this. But because they don't age in the show, because it's a cartoon, because it's animated, they don't need to age them. Actually, it's interesting to see some of these characters do evolve in that way, just not our main focus.
There's a lot of evolution in the characters, not just in their design, but in their character work as well. It's just...
Oh, yeah, the personalities in the characters as well.
Yeah, the personalities change, but they do... Even though the show has that timeless quality in that they're not aging, characters grow. Like, they do learn over the course of the show and stuff. So... There is evolution there. And it was The Simpsons' Christmas Boogie. There was an album. The Simpsons' Christmas Boogie. So I knew there fucking was. It wasn't directly related to this episode. But it was just a Christmas album.
Merch.
There's loads of Simpsons Christmas merch.
I may have to download it later on. So I've got something to listen to on the way to work tomorrow.
Well, there you go.
You're right. I think the characters do evolve as well. I think Patty's probably the best example of that, because... Certainly in this episode, all you see are the two mean sisters, the very sort of Cinderella stepsisters.
Yeah.
In design. And actually, as it evolves and as they get... Sorry, next door's cat jumped on the window. As the show goes on, you do get more about these characters, where Selma is very... Selma is the one looking for love. Patty doesn't want it, but then she has a relationship with Skinner. Mm. And so you get these evolutions of the characters whereby... It's not just about sort of the central cast. So the secondary characters have one. So they all have their own particular arcs. And I mean, I don't know how many times Selma's been fucking married at this point. I think they're up to four by the time I stop watching.
Yeah.
And they just they do that. But then that becomes, again, same with a regular sitcom, that becomes a running storyline.
Yeah.
And you poke fun at it, but you're poking fun at the situation, not the character.
Yeah.
Because even though they start off as absolute cunt rags, Patty and Selma become integral to the show.
Yeah.
Because they inform a lot. No, they inform a lot of the storylines around Marge. So where they're exactly as Lisa was in this episode, when they're ragging on Homer, Marge has something to kick back against. She has a foil, effectively, and all of these things you can see that just the little sort of nuggets in this first episode. And nobody in there, if you spoke to Matt Groening, there's no way in hell he thought he was getting a 35-year run out of the show.
No chance.
But what he has done is gone, right, okay, the stuff that was there, the stuff that we built in to make this relatable, and the fact that we've got this downtrodden loser guy who's broke, his job's shit, his kids have unrealistically high expectations, his in-laws hate him because they're his in-laws, all these things are there because they fit that very early mold. But actually, rather than sort of flushing them away or trying to retread that, they let these characters breathe. And by the time you get to season 4, 8, 10, 20, 30, actually there's a very rich history with these characters where you can say, actually, I could watch an entire arc. We're looking at Patty and Selma from episode 1 up to episode 773 or wherever the fuck they're on now.
Yeah.
And you can pick out, they're probably only in two dozen episodes across that time where they're featured in anything. Mm. But you can see that and see how they develop. Same with Moe, same with Barney, same with Flanders, same with Krabappel, same with Skinner. They do, they build these characters up, and they've done it over 35 years. And I think that's another reason why it's lasted so well. It's not the same show every week.
Yeah.
Whereas, you look at a Full House, you look at a Family Ties or anything like that. They were very, I don't say they were one note because that's unfair to the shows, because they, in their own way, they would have been groundbreaking in some way, in enough to keep them on the air. And they were good, and they're certainly my fucking childhood. That's why I say most of the things I say. That's why I think the way I think a lot of the time, because I grew up on American sitcoms.
Yeah.
But they wouldn't have endured in the same way. And if you watched Family Ties every week for fucking 35 years.
Yeah.
That doesn't fucking happen.
No, that would, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I think we're kind of, we could talk all night about the effect this show has had and how good it is. But ultimately, we're supposed to be talking about the fact that it's a Christmas special. But like I said, my problem is that I don't view this as special.
It's just it's a Christmas episode, or it's a seasonal episode that happens to be set to Christmas. It's not about Christmas.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, all I've really got to say about it in summation is it's good, isn't it? It's fucking yeah. Simpsons.
I really enjoyed it. I mean, I haven't seen this episode for a long time. Yes, it looked them. It's always a little bit jarring when you look at the very, very early episodes because of the animation and sort of the character design. And obviously that evolved and improved greatly when the money started coming in. Mm. But so you look at the early ones and think, oh, okay, yeah, I can tell it's an old one because the character design, certainly on Homer, but so the lines are a lot thicker, stuff like that. And the credits, and then they changed the credits around about season 4. They changed them again around about season 20. So you can kind of put yourself in an era or a period of time where that's the ones you're watching. But actually, I mean, I watched this, and aside from the fact it looks old, and I know it's an old episode. I'm not watching this thinking, fuck me, this is 30 years old. It shows.
It I'm watching this thinking,
actually,
it?
if it looked like Simpsons look now, you could have this episode today.
Yeah, you could.
You could release that as this year's seasonal episode, and it would be absolutely fine.
And it would be just as relevant as well, is the thing. That's the key, and that's why you could hear it today. We talk about the universality of themes on a lot of our kind of animated sitcom shows, and a lot of our like high school drama shows as well. We talk about the universality of that, and this is the same thing. You know, like you said, there's for the majority of us, you know, unless you're super rich, for the majority of us, this is a relatable theme, and it's just as relatable today as it ever was, and it'll be just as relatable in another 35 years as it ever was. It's why to a lesser extent because of the fantasy element of it, is why to a lesser extent the Flintstones is still popular, not as popular as it was, not as popular as the Simpsons, but it's still relevant,
it's still a thing.
It's good. Simpsons is good, isn't it? That Matt Groening, he's done all right for 35 years, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's, as Paul Dan used to say, he makes a living.
Yeah, he's a bit clever, that one, isn't he? It's good. Look, you're not going to disagree with us, listeners. If you do, quite frankly, you're the other person besides Mark's mother. So it's you.
Realistically, if you've got this far into the episode, then you're probably not the one who dislikes it. No, I mean, we're fucking an hour and change into the show.
Yeah,
you're not going to say, listen to us wanking on about The Simpsons for a fucking hour if you didn't like
it. I think we've been pretty measured. I'm pretty sure both of us could be a lot more.
Oh, there's a lot more sort of effusive and hyperbolic.
Yeah, definitely more hyperbole than we've. But then, like I said, I don't want to be that guy because I'm not the Simpsons expert. So,
no.
That's not me. I mean, I'm just somebody that really enjoyed the show for a period of about 15 years.
Yeah, absolutely. And to be fair, I mean, the ones I've watched recently, the last couple of years, not recent, but again, they're just as endearing the new ones as the old ones. No, the character, and again, that's testament to the way that the characters were set out, and they've sort of stuck true to them. Mm. But I mean, yeah, I mean there are other podcasts which will do fucking episode by episode of The Simpsons. We don't have 770 weeks.
Hell no.
You know, especially with all the other shows, because that would be fucking thousands of weeks by the time we actually
rewatching Game of Thrones thing. Was hard enough, and that was only fucking 8 seasons. So.
Yeah, 35 seasons of a lot more episodes. That would probably take us a couple of lifetimes, I'd imagine.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so we probably won't do that, listeners. But yeah, I mean, this is one of those shows that I will always profess to being a fan of, even if I don't see it for a while. And it's something that we were away the weekend with my old uni housemates, and one thing that was commented on is that we see each other once or twice a year, and we're in a WhatsApp group which nobody fucking uses, and we're not talking to each other all the time. But when we do meet up, it's like we've not had that gap, because we just pick up where we left off, normally busting somebody's balls over something stupid they've said or done, or the fact that we're all going fucking bald because we're all middle-aged. But that was the conversation we had. And for me, The Simpsons kind of feels like that you can dip in and out at any point over those 35 years. And it doesn't make a difference where you slot back in, because it just feels as comfortable as The Simpsons ever did.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't think I'm alone in that feeling. And I genuinely, I mean, we say this all the time, and so we do generally appreciate the feedback. But this show is so iconic and so fucking huge and so far reaching that everybody will have a Simpsons story.
Yeah.
Everybody will have something it means. So I mean, please listen and share those with us, because I mean, that's why we do this show. Yes, we get to watch stuff that we liked when we were younger. Yes, we get to revisit things, but we want to know what. No, we will be revisiting it because it's something that we liked when we were younger. We may still like it now. We may not, but we do it for the nostalgia and the recollection just as much as the watching. And other people will have that. So by all means, please email us, tweet, or however you want to get in touch with us. I would love to know what some of your lasting memories are of the show. That's something that's of. Everybody will be different, I think. Mm. Everybody will remember a different bit. They'll have a different quote, a different episode that sort of sits with them and has done for the last 30 years. As always, please get in touch on Twitter at SMPDpod. You can go to our website, ddpodcast.net, where you can also get our previous episodes of this show and our other shows. Wherever you get your podcasts from, subscribe, leave a message, and we'll get back to you as best we can. But until next time.
In the words of lots and lots and lots of different Bart Simpson festive merchandise that I've seen over the years, listeners, have a cool Yule. Have a safe and enjoyable Christmas. Don't have a cow, man. And we'll see you in 2025.
Hey, Rudolph, get your nose over here so you can guide my sleigh today.
Oh, Homer. And all the reindeer will do.